This week, we check in with one of our favorite sellers, Sherry Smith.
Also this week, we'll have an update from the founders of the Boss Reseller Remix event, which took place in Las Vegas last week.
And of course, we'll be answering your questions.
I'm Brian Burke.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information you need to help you start, manage, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 213. So are you recovered, Brian?
I am. I did need the weekend, though.
And you got it.
I did get it. Last weekend was a recovery weekend.
It was a fun event, but of course, I was a little concerned because I haven't traveled in 3 years.
That's right.
But as it turns out, no, everything went really smoothly, and we spent day two of their event. I did, at least. I know you were there the day before,
yes.
And we recorded all day. Rebecca sat in as co-host for most everything except a conversation that's coming up.
Yes.
But we got so much good content, I was a little concerned because I thought, all right, the podcast can't be just Reseller Remix for the next 3 months.
Well, I don't know if Kenny and Vicky wouldn't mind, but
I'm sure they would not. But we met some new sellers that we've never spoken to.
What's really nice about that is we've been kind of, I don't want to say cloistered, but we haven't been out seeing sellers in person as much. I went to the Reseller Remix last October.
Cloistered. I feel like a nun.
So let's see now.
I threw you off tonight.
You did throw me off. And then I was back in Denver in April.
Well, you've been all over the road.
Not that much, but I mean, not compared to what I used to do. I used to do like probably 24 seller events a year. And now I've done only 4 for the whole year.
Let me go get my little violin.
No, I'm not complaining. I actually liked it. And one of the things that I really enjoyed at the Reseller Remix was just, one, reconnecting with some sellers that I haven't seen in a year.
Yeah, that was good.
And then two, meeting new sellers. And then also just hearing some of the stories and some of the insights from different people who do different things. They sell plus do stuff.
Yeah.
That's the fascinating thing.
And Katie, Vicky, and Teresa gave us the most amazing space to record.
Oh, they did.
I was a little concerned that it was going to be too big and echoey, but we put up our big banners. And the room was acoustically perfect, and it was just really comfortable. And there's just enough of a bleed through from the crowd, so you know that we're just outside of a live event. What's up in the news this week?
We've got one big news item this week.
Really? I can't imagine what that might be.
I think you know it.
I do.
The big news this week is about tomorrow's launch of the eBay Seller Spotlight podcast.
The official launch. Yes. Yes, 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 indeed. We've been working on this for a few months under wraps now, and the official launch is tomorrow, October 19th at 5 a.m. Pacific time.
And this new addition to our podcast library is hosted by Georgia Mimpanis. She'll introduce a new seller every episode. And where here on the eBay for Business podcast, we tend to focus on the how of selling, Georgia will delve into the why.
And we've recorded a few of the episodes already, and they're pretty good. So there'll be the intention is to provide some fascinating backstories and the inspiration that led a lot of these sellers to move from one place in life to a place where they're selling on eBay, which we love.
And you know what's wonderful about seller stories? It's just like the ability for sellers, whether they're brand new on our platform and just have discovered this podcast,
Yeah. Here's
a source of information, another angle to hear about your business.
Exactly.
And experienced sellers, they're always learning something new.
You can subscribe to the new eBay Seller Podcast in your podcast app by searching for eBay Seller Spotlight. If you type in those three words in any of your apps, it comes right to the top.
And you can also listen to the new podcast on our eBay community at www.ebay.com/podcasts. That's with an S.
Well, getting back to our trip to Vegas last week, Brian, at the end of day two, you and I sat down to check in with the three founders of the event, Katie Zilberberg, Vicky Egan, and Teresa Cox, just to chat about how the event had been going to that point. Let's listen. Well, it's the end of the day here for us. It's technically day two, because yesterday was a half day, I think, at the second annual Boss Reseller Remix. Right now, we have the three founders and managers and overseers of the entire event with us, Katie Zilberberg, Vicky Egan, and Teresa Cox.
Thanks, Griff.
Vicky, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling really positive. I'm feeling like really energized being able to be with other sellers and be with our community and be with our people. And the feedback from everybody has been phenomenal.
Katie?
Well, I mean, I'll say for one thing, I'm absolutely exhausted, as I think we all are. There's been lots of giggling while we've just been trying to record this little interview. But it's a good kind of exhausted. It's just, you know, nonstop interacting with people, making friends, hanging out with old friends. And it's just been amazing. You know, we had our first event last year and it went so well. It was like, how do we possibly top that or even just maintain the same level of quality in the event for the people that were coming back as well as our new attendees? And honestly, we've definitely exceeded, I think, everything that we did last year. And it's just been unbelievable. And I'm really, really tired. And we still have another day to go.
And Teresa, what's your word of advice to someone who's thinking of doing an event?
I would say you have to love what you're doing. You have to love the community. You have to want to do it because there's times where things get a little stressful. There's times when you're tired. There's times when you're like, I don't know how much stuff we should buy. Let's just buy it all and see what happens. And then all that stuff goes away when you get here. And so I like to tell people, just try it. Try it once. And if you don't like it, don't do it again.
Vicki, is there one word of advice you would give on the don't column? Like, don't do this if you're just starting out.
Don't do this if you're just looking for a revenue stream. It's very difficult, and there are a lot of moving parts to put together a successful event or conference, whether it's one day, 2 days, 5 days. And if you're as an individual, you don't want to do this with the intention of it being a revenue stream. That can't be your primary intention because it's not going to be authentic. I think if you try to do it in any other way, it probably won't be successful. It can't be something that comes across as contrived or inauthentic because people sniff that stuff out.
And having been here for the 2 years in a row, you can tell that it is about the community. And that, I would say, comes across in spades.
Katie, is there a plan or an aspiration to actually grow the event? Or are you happy with the level it is right now?
Well, we hold this event at the Blind Center of Nevada, and it is a smaller venue. So there is a limit to how many people we can have here in person. We haven't hit that limit yet, so we do have room for growth as far as just pure numbers go. And honestly, our intention is to stay here for as long as possible, if not forever. We do appreciate the boutique feel of this event, and it's something that you can't get if you have 2,000 people in a space. And so being able to keep it down to probably all in around 450 people is kind of our goal. And we don't see any reason to move beyond that. We're not looking, you know, what Vicki was saying about it being a revenue stream. While there can be a small amount of revenue made from it, our intention is not to become full-time event planners. It takes a lot of work to put this event on as it is. But once you go beyond the size, much bigger, it really would be a full-time event that we would need to be planning for year-round. And that's just not what we're looking to do. We're just all about kind of creating this really personal experience that you can only have with a certain number of people. And so we just want to really focus on keeping this as an authentic, very personal experience for a limited number of people.
Vicki, what's up for next year? Is there anything you can tell us?
We've already secured the dates.
Hooray!
Yay!
We knew that we were going to continue. I think we knew after the first night last year that this was something that we were going to try to just, you know, make better year after year after year while keeping it the same size or maybe growing slightly. We do have some plans for next year. I mean, this year we added a virtual ticket option. I'm sure we're going to continue with that next year so that people that are not able to attend will still be able to absorb the content and have the experience. We're always looking to improve upon the experience without necessarily breaking people's pockets in order to attend.
You said we secured the space for next year, but you didn't even say the dates.
I was letting you.
Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys. We already have the Blind Center booked next year for October 16th through the 19th, 2023. So start making plans. Mark your calendar now. You do not want to miss out on this event. Yeah, so we do feel the buzz is growing, and we feel really confident about our ability next year. And especially seeing how successful we've been this year over last year, I feel pretty confident that we're easily going to be able to continue to grow.
Teresa, what's your takeaway from this year?
My takeaway would be, if you don't think it's for you and I can't do it, and if you're full of I can'ts, make this the one thing that you can do.
Is there anything you want to add in promoting next year?
I just wanted to expand on what Teresa says. You know, reselling in general is a very solitary thing. And it's sometimes can be very difficult if you are all alone, working all alone, don't have employees. Maybe you have a partner or a spouse that doesn't really get what you do, doesn't understand what you do. It's really important to find your people. It's really important to connect with other people that understand what you do, why you do it, can help you through the struggles. You know, our thing this year is talking about people finding an accountability partner, finding somebody to help encourage you to move past your comfort zone, whatever that may be. You don't have to be a multi-million dollar seller. You don't have to be anything more than what you want to be. And success is different for everybody. It could be, you want to earn an extra couple hundred dollars a month. It could be that you want to hit $1 million in sales. Whatever that is can be achieved by pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone and finding other people that will help support that.
Thanks very much. We've been speaking with Katie Zilberberg, Vicki Egan, and Teresa Cox. Three of them work hard all year to put together the event known as the Boss Reseller Remix. And hopefully we'll see you next year here. Great job. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay, well, that was good.
It was good. Yeah. And as you heard, Katie, Vicki, and Teresa have announced the dates for next year. So mark your calendars. I already have.
If you really want to pencil in or pen in a definite event, this is the one. As I recall from the past 2 years, tickets usually go on sale for the Boss Reseller Remix midsummer. So bookmark their page at www.resellerremix.com. And don't forget to check it starting next July.
Sounds good, and you'll enjoy it.
Brian, I think you'd be very excited about who our guest is today.
I think I will be.
Because she's very familiar to the both of us. I remember Sherry under many auspices, but the one that always sticks out in my mind is that she used to be a part of our employee orientation program called Becoming eBay. Welcome, Sherry Smith.
In person.
Thank you. I miss those.
They were pretty fun, weren't they?
They were so fun. I felt like a rock star.
I think you'd still be doing them, but you moved to Denver, correct?
Yes. And now I have done some virtually, right, Brian?
Yes, she has. They're just as much fun, but I think there's that little bit of missing bit where you guys could go talk to the new employees over dinner afterwards. And that was really great for the new employees, too, to get to know you.
I loved that. Regaling a whole table.
Yes. And I love that we have the opportunity to reassure our listener that when new employees come into the company, they meet sellers.
Absolutely. And I tell them all my hopes and dreams at that meeting because they're listening and they're excited to work here.
So Sherry, I know that you've been selling on eBay for a while. Exactly how long have you been selling on eBay?
Since February 2006.
How did you get started?
So I was working at a company that was a Fortune 500 company. I say that because they know how to be profitable. And I was working 11-hour days, which I don't mind working hard, but I do need to decide who I work with. And I'm also I'm not that great about people telling me what to do. I was making a lot of money. My husband and I had a mortgage. We had just gotten married. And we came to a point where I was totally strung out on stress. And I would start winding down Saturday night, and then Sunday I'd start getting stressed out thinking about Monday. We decided our home life was more important than the money, and I quit that job. And then I thought, as I looked at other jobs, I thought, to make enough money, I might have to be a little miserable. But
it's the misery factor.
Yeah, it's like you get paid more for the more misery. But then I thought, well, I'm going to start selling some things on eBay. Just until I get a job. And I had 6 weeks because I had commissions coming for 6 weeks before I really had to buckle down and get another job. I started listing some jewelry that I had accumulated pre-husband, and I only wanted to wear what he got me.
Of course, yeah.
And I started selling platters that he had inherited from his grandmother that we weren't using. Then he came home from work one day and he said, "Honey, you have to call this lady. She wants to know what you charge to sell her Coach purses." The sky opened and I'm like, if I can make this a full-time income, I don't have to go get another job and be told what to do.
You get to decide what to do.
Yes. And that was February 2006 and I've never had to get another job.
It's a wonderful story.
And so one of your first opportunities for selling on eBay was consignment selling, and you still consignment sell today.
I've never swayed. I mean, we've had a couple of opportunities where we bought stuff and resold, but I'm all consignment sales.
And how many listings do you have up at any given time?
Well, right now, and this is right at the end of summer, I have 1,800 listings.
Okay, so that's a lot of listings.
That is a lot of listings.
When you started out, did you have any help or did you have to figure it out on your own, the consignment end of a business?
So what happened was after my husband told me I had to call her, I Googled, what do you charge to sell on consignment on eBay? And I got a 300-page ebook I found, and it said how to be one of the top consignment sellers on eBay. And this is in 2006.
Sure.
Because I knew I had 6 weeks to see if this was going to work. I did everything it said to do. And he said what price that you shouldn't sell below. He said you should specialize, and I've never gotten to that. I kind of specialize in selling anything that'll make a profit that I'm willing to ship. And then over time, even like after I did everything it told me to do, I have then modified what I find should be modified. And also changing with the market, changing with eBay. But I absolutely needed that model and contract and
kind of some structure to get started.
Absolutely. You need the structure. And then when I get new clients, I show them the contract and I say, look it over. It shows what my commissions are. Let me know what your questions are. And I'm happy to give you estimates of what your stuff will sell for. And that way it kind of just sets it up right from the beginning. And if they're like good with that, then I research their items and put it on a spreadsheet along with sold items that were similar and what estimated selling price I think they'll have. And that way, if they feel comfortable, great, I take it. That was my estimate. I always make it clear it might not sell for this. It's just my best estimate. And then they have expectations about that I'll pay them monthly, you know, after the buyers receive the item and the return period is kind of over.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And you've set your commission rate, so there's no questions there and no confusion at the end of a sale on what portion is going to you for the work that you've done.
Absolutely, because I'm a people pleaser. And if someone's disappointed in me, I'm crushed. I just tell them everything up front. I want to make you happy. Like, I want them to be happily surprised. So I just prevent like a disappointment.
It's a good strategy.
Do you primarily use one or another format, like auction or versus buy it now?
In the early days, I did use auction a lot and also kept up with eBay, where eBay was even changing that it was not as expensive to do a fixed price or buy it now. And I changed my ways along with eBay's changes because now mostly people want to just get it and buy it. So I'll do that. And then occasionally I'll have an item where I found similar ones sold, but not the same. So just in case it's worth more, I'll do an auction starting at about what the most someone got, just in case it's worth more. And if they don't bid, then I relist it as a fixed price. 99% of my listings are fixed price.
When you're setting the expectations for your consignor, do you give them a range? Because you may have to, for example, if you say you're going to sell list it for a certain price, you may, for example, want to take offers or provide offers. Is that taken into account when you give them the price range of what they can expect to see for the item?
Yes, absolutely. So I've added another column to my estimates sheet. One of them is the most a similar one got. I put that on the sheet. And then I have another one of my estimate of what this will sell for, which sometimes is less. I also have a column of what I'm going to start the price at, which is the high end, because I'm doing a fixed price. And I tell them every day I send 10% offers to watchers or people who are looking at it, whoever eBay lets me send them to. And over time, I do markdown sales where I'll mark them down 20% or 25%. I make it very clear. I started at the highest price we might possibly get, and I let them know that I'm doing that and that I will continue to mark it down over time.
Smart.
Thanks.
So, Sherry, one of the things that we've just been going through is a pandemic, and has that impacted your business at all, either in the ability to get new inventory or meet new people, or even like how you pick up and get inventory, or any impact?
You know what? In like multiple ways. Because at the beginning of COVID, I no longer could have my teenage part-time workers come. It happened to be at a time when I had accepted some big things to sell, and they were selling. So I was shipping these monstrosities all by myself and then using leverage to get them in the car. So that's one thing I remember. I was also propping up my phone and doing videos of like shipping big things.
Give me an example of a big thing.
Okay, here's one. What was this thing? It was almost like a seesaw, but it was some kind of an exercise piece of equipment. It was huge, but it didn't exceed 130 inches length plus girth, believe it or not.
Okay, it was heavy too, I bet.
It weighed 67 pounds.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So it could still be shipped, but it was a monster to get in my car as a one person. But leverage goes so far, and I was using it because I couldn't get in the car otherwise. And then the next thing that started happening was that people were contacting me more to sell their stuff because they're at home getting ready to get rid of stuff. I had one new client and he's like, I don't know what to do. All these boxes of vintage California deer pottery.
I know that pottery, yes.
You have never seen so many deer in your life. And people, yeah, they totally collect them. So he said, I don't know what to do. So we came up with that he would put it out on a bookcase in the garage. We both wore masks. He didn't stand near me. And I looked up every one of those in his garage because I didn't want to take them home and or even list them if they weren't going to sell. I was in his garage for 2 hour blocks of time, using all that time to look them up. That's kind of grueling. However, when I got home, I had the link to the similar item that sold on the spreadsheet, and I would click it and do sell similar, and I had my estimated price on the spreadsheet. I could utilize all that work I already did.
That's smart.
It's almost like the listing was already partly made. Actually, sometimes I would just save it, a sell similar as a draft and just put in that estimated price that I was going to list it for. So that was one method. Another client dropped off their stuff on my porch. This is like beginning of the pandemic, you know, don't come in contact. And I just told them I'll go through it all and then I'll put it back on my porch. You can pick up what's not sellable. And then other clients, I picked up what they had, took it, and then brought back what I wasn't going to sell.
Ah, so it didn't really stop you from getting inventory?
Not at all. It just made it steamier, you know, with the mask.
Yes.
I was thinking another thing, but what's the state of that business now?
I mean, normally I probably have had 800 items listed. Then I was averaging like 1,300. And now at the end of summer, I'm up to 1,800. I'm continuing to grow. Expenses are more. I'm paying my employees more. I paid $75 to fill up my truck with gas. That is so much money. I need to make more. And I actually hired a part-time adult. She's a full-time adult, but she's going to work part-time for me.
How do you pull that off?
And can she teach me?
Yeah, I want to be, I am kind of a part-time adult.
After the I'm off the clock, I turn into a teenager.
That's right. Well, my nieces and nephews, they think that I belong at the kids' table every time.
Well, that's an honor.
It is an honor. Yeah. I tell them, you know what? That's an honor. Thank you. Now sit by yourself. No, I'm kidding. I don't do that. So she's going to work one day a week listing. And then I still have some of the teenagers didn't go off to college this year because they're still in high school. I mean, they're 15. Yeah. And they're going to work a couple hours after school, a couple days a week. And then I can focus on marketing because I do want to share with you one of the things I do to market to get more consigners because that's sourcing for me. You know, want to know what it is?
Yeah, well, yes. We're waiting, please.
Okay. I'm sure you all know the Chamber of Commerce. And they have chamber mixers.
Yes.
However, they also have these very structured business networking groups. And at these meetings, they have an agenda that they follow. And you can give a 30-second to 1-minute infomercial in front of the entire group. Now, everyone in the room has heard what I do. And I've heard what all of them do. And I'm telling you, no one who's selling on eBay is going to these business networking meetings that I know of. So I go to my meeting every week, and then I go to other people's meetings like 20 minutes away, and I am a visitor there, and I say I sell on eBay, and I give a different infomercial every time. Like, I'm looking for someone who's moving, who doesn't want to move all the stuff they don't use. I can come give them estimates so they can give me referrals. And another week, I might say a good referral for me is somebody who's buying a new car and wants to see if they can get more if I sell their car on eBay than trading it in.
So you're taking advantage of those small business networks.
That's
smart.
Right.
And there's usually food, right?
Sometimes there's like breakfast.
I'm there.
But there isn't always like my current one. And this one's a business. It's actually called BNI. And I'm telling you, I'm not trying to plug them. I'm just saying if someone wants to go look up BNI.com in their area, and visit a chapter, they'll give an infomercial and they might, you know, think this is how I need to market, because you meet local people that you can sell for. And those people rarely know someone who sells on eBay on consignment.
That's a good point. And there's donuts too, right?
Sometimes there's donuts. I bring four drinks.
Griff's there if there's donuts.
I'll bring donuts with you if you visit mine.
Okay.
It's interesting when you were talking about the deer things and you were getting estimates. When you get the estimates on eBay, what part of our site do you leverage for that? Advanced search, or do you use Terapeak?
I do look it up on eBay, and I'm doing it all with my phone. I see that, okay, there's 100 active. And then I click sold, and I see that 20 sold. So right now I know it's got a 20% sell-through rate, and the eBay search is maybe going back 90 days. But if I need more clarity, I will use my browser on my phone to open the desktop site of eBay.
Yeah, we talked about this in a previous episode. Yeah.
Okay, and go to Terapeak and then have Terapeak tell me the sell-through rate, because I need to know what it sells for. And I also need to know the sell-through rate, because if it's 5%, and this is not a technical number, it's going to take a very long time to sell.
Right. And then that's an expectation then you can set with that customer where, again, you're not disappointing them.
Exactly.
Even with all of that, though, setting those expectations, are you sometimes barraged by certain customers about why isn't it sold? Why hasn't it sold? When is it going to sell? I want my money. When is it going to sell? When is it going to sell?
I have had one customer like that in the past 4 years.
Oh, good. Just one.
And I use that experience as an example of when I tell people, okay, I'm not going to take these items. I tell them, because you'll be disappointed and you're going to be waiting and thinking, why aren't my items selling? And it's because the sell-through rate is so low and you're not going to be happy with me. For me, it's going to be a lot of work and they're not selling. The thing that I'm working, and it's a never-ending attempt, but I'm working at it, is saying no to items, because no one ends up happy.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy when people are disappointed in me. I like throw a tantrum.
Yeah, well, it only makes sense if you're trying to run a business successfully and you know that something in front of you is just never going to sell for what they expect or sell at all. It's really important to be upfront and frank. Of course, there's always that possibility you may insult them because they think so much of it, and it can be like related to a family relative or something, and then they get their knickers in a twist. And has that happened?
Oh, heck yeah. I totally offend people. And I'm serious. I'm not joking. I mean, I'm not trying to, but I'm like, better to offend you now than have later. You disappointed yeah. later.
Your time is money. And if you know the sell-through rate is really low, the likelihood of you getting paid for that item and the time that you took to list that item is much lower as well. You're much better off spending that time on an item with a 40% sell-through rate than one with a 5% sell-through rate.
Oh my gosh, so much. So I can teach anyone how to go broke selling on eBay.
That's a great tagline.
Yeah. go broke selling on eBay. You should write a book.
Thank you. I know I'm over-promising, but I mean it. I've done it in several different ways. And one of them is list whatever you can get your hands on. And I've done that. And it might still be listed 5 years later. So one of those things is some costume vintage jewelry. I have over 100 of them still on my site. And someone bought one of the pieces. I mean, it's a great deal for her and it's pretty, but there's a gazillion of them on eBay and it's going to take that many years to sell. So anyway, she bought one for $12. And she said, do you mind waiting a couple days to ship this? Because I'd like to look through your other items and then ship them together. I'm like, I don't mind. Look through my store. Get as much vintage costume jewelry as you would like, and I'll ship them all together. For all the rest, get free shipping, because it's so hard to get rid of some of this stuff.
You've already sunk cost into it. So take advantage of the sale when you can get it.
That's right.
I am curious, as a potential consignor, how you deal with certain situations. So can we play act a little bit?
Sure.
You're going to be Sherry Smith of Sherry Sells, and I'm going to be somebody who've never met, who is bringing to you a most priceless round glass ashtray. It's not fancy. It has no mark on it. But my grandfather told me that this was worth a lot of money, that Franklin Delano Roosevelt put his cigarette in this. He doesn't have any proof of that, but I believe him because he was a nice guy. and I think I can get $100 for this. Will you take this from me and sell it for $100?
I'm going to look it up right next to you right now.
Okay, so would you look it up? It doesn't have any marks. It's just a round ashtray. But he did say that, you know, FDR put his cigarette holder in this.
Oh, that's so sweet. Okay, so I'm going to look it up, and I'm going to look up clear glass vintage ashtray.
Okay, they're probably $100 or more, I think.
Yeah. Oh, here, you know, here's some. There's a 100 listed.
Yeah.
And now on sold. Oh, and there's like 10 sold.
Okay.
And I'm going to click this button here. It puts the one that sold for the most money on top.
Ooh, I can't wait. Let's do that.
Oh my gosh. Here it is at $4.75 with free shipping.
$4? Well, I can't sell this for that much. This is a priceless historic heirloom.
I know it is. And it's not going to sell for that much. As you can see, and so you should keep it.
But FDR, he used it.
I know, that's so tricky. I mean, let me put that on the search. I'm going to put...
I know how this ends.
You know what this reminds me of? We were talking to a seller.
By the way, you were really good.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, good.
You could be an actress.
Oh, I actually was just being myself.
I think she was being herself.
I was. I'm not kidding.
Because if you turn the tables and I'm the seller and you were doing this, I'd say, glass ashtray for $100. FDR, get out of here.
No, he would not say get out of here. He'd say, FDR, F you.
No, I wouldn't go that far, but I'd have a hard time keeping my tongue in my cheek.
Yeah. So you know what it reminds me, that whole little scenario. We had a seller on a little while ago, and he said, I try not to get married to my item. And that, Griff, you were married to your item.
Well, I was married to the $100 my grandfather said I'd get someday.
Yes.
And now I don't like him anymore.
You know, one of the biggest disappointments other than unmarked vintage glass, by the way, unless it's red, if you have a hurricane lamp, that is red glass that's antique.
Yeah, that'll sell.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
But the other thing, oh my gosh, dolls, porcelain dolls. Oh my gosh.
They used to be big.
They used to be so big. And some people have collected them. They've been passed down and they're basing their retirement on them.
Oh,
I mean,
oh,
and
no.
I go look them up. The sell-through rate is 5%. An occasional one sells for $20 and it's a big, long box that's going to be a little difficult to ship.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost a lot for the buyer because it exceeds sometimes the 21 inches.
Or those giant dolls, the ones that really creep you out.
Some of those giant ones, if they're plastic, maybe, but maybe not. Not porcelain, though.
Yeah.
No way. So I've very much disappointed people in the porcelain doll arena.
There's a woman who wanted me to sell teacups for her on consignment on eBay, and I went... I think I might have been a little too abrupt. I said, yeah, well, no one buys teacups. And she was really offended. I said, well, unless you're willing to sell them for $1 a piece, I take great offense. And I didn't know, look, lady, I don't know you that well, and I'm trying to be nice, but no one buys this stuff anymore. You know, hold on to them and give them to your children. And I, you know, somebody who's a teacup collector is no doubt going to take great offense at this comment, and they're going to email me, and I urge you to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah, send me an email.
That sounds like a dare.
Sentiment can get in the way of objectivity.
And it's not to say that sentiment doesn't have its place, especially when it's collecting. Collecting is all about passion, but you got to be realistic. I mean, there's just some things that maybe they sold well at one time, but they just no interest.
And things go in and out of favor.
They do. I noticed that some things even that weren't worth very much when I started selling on eBay, somehow people are looking for them now. I can't think of any examples.
I can give you an example.
Okay, like good.
Pyrex, casserole dishes.
Yeah.
Everyone wants one.
Especially sometimes in that orange color.
Orange, you know? Or cornflower blue.
Yes.
And I'm of the age where you bought those new from the department store. And there were thousands of them. You never thought this is going to be collectible someday, but they are. So right now, those are hot.
Oh, good. See, yeah. Fun, fast tip.
Keep your eye out for them.
And what were those votive candles that I looked up the other day?
Glassy something, and I should have written it down. I didn't. They're really
glassy
hot.
Glassy baby.
Glassy baby.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Just a hunk of glass with a hole in it.
My client who sends me stuff to sell for her, and she has the best stuff. And I listed everything she sent me. And was putting off the glassy baby because I had never experienced it before, but I list anything she gives me because it always turns out to be good, no matter what I think when I first lay eyes on it. And when I look them up, I'm like, oh my gosh, even her votive candle holders are good. Glassy baby.
And who am I to question a trend? But I'm going to anyway. So I'm not investing in these, but, you know, good luck.
Yeah, don't do it for your retirement.
No. I remember in the 90s when eBay got started, how many people sunk hundreds and thousands of dollars into Beanie Babies.
Oh, my gosh.
Didn't work out well for some people.
No.
But that market's still active. So
it may be active. It's one of the only things where I don't bother to look it up. And I just tell them I don't sell Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, the one I have has a miss mark. I'm like, they all have a miss mark.
That's my drag name, Miss Mark.
Not a double stamped coin from 1952.
Yeah.
No. I'm like, I don't know. You know, you can try it. Maybe there's someone who wants to sell them. I have not unlocked the Beanie Baby mystery. Yeah. I attempted it one time. I don't know. I seem to see one that sold for a bunch of money. Seems like I have the same one. Anyway, I don't sell Beanie Babies.
Yeah, I had a bag of them. I don't know where they came from. And I felt the same way. So I just put them in the bag that was going to Savers. I'm sure some seller or collector was really happy, but I can't picture myself selling them. Anyway, I don't want to denigrate any one category because sellers are now a Beanie Baby. Just tuning off the podcast. No, that's the last time I listen to you, click. Hey,
they can write in and then I will tell them anytime I get that source because if they've mastered it,
yeah,
I want them to have.
Oh, that's a good idea. So if you do have Beanie Babies that you want, or you want Beanie Babies on consignment, for example, we'll give you Sherry's. Well, you can contact her. It's just Sherry Sells. Sherry _, and that's Sherry_ Sells on eBay. Send her a message and say, hey, I got a hot tip for you. Beanie Babies. You got any? I can sell them.
I will divert that traffic to you. I will send those people to you.
At least I don't do to Beanie Babies what I used to do to Hummels.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I heard. Did you have a Hummel crashing machine?
No, it was a hammer. I carried one. It was a hammer.
Oh, the hammer.
And that's what you would do? You just smash them?
I despise Hummels so much. And this is a personal thing. Please don't take it. That whenever I would see one, I'd go into a blind rage, take out my hammer and smash it into little bits. And this caused some issues.
Especially with the owner of the Hummel.
Well, I would, yeah.
That's how to offend a client.
Yeah. So what I did is I started buying the cheap ones, and then I'd take them to seller events, and we'd get to the subject of Hummels, and I'd pull one out in a plastic Ziploc bag, and I'd bring out my little pink hammer, and I'd smash it. And there were people in the audience who would freak out.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd say, well, why? Why are you so upset? It was not that valuable. And they said, well, you know, I like Hummels. And I said, yes, and your collection just went up in value a little bit because I've reduced the supply.
See, they don't appreciate that. But I bet it wasn't a Hummel with a big B or big V or...
No, of course, I'm not that stupid. These were Hummels with like the small, who cares? You know, they're worth a dollar or something.
The ones where they made 26,000 of them.
And it's just certain types of kitsch that just really enrage me. And that was one of them.
I think you should do an episode.
Well, we just did.
Well, there's only a couple things. It sounded like there are more.
No. There's not really much, you know, no. I mean, other figurines, I'm indifferent. But it was just something about Hummels that just flips a switch. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I'm so happy to know someone who has this smoldering anger as I do at certain things.
What is your thing?
Okay. Here's something. And it's usually questions from a potential buyer I don't know how to answer without sounding as angry as I am. So okay.
That is a challenge, yes.
The most recent one that I had to really think about, I had these sterling silver cat earrings. And she asked, are these from a smoke-free, pet-free home? And I thought, do you like animals or not? These are cat earrings.
She likes the concept of a cat, but she doesn't like owning one.
And also, does sterling silver absorb smoke smell?
Oh, I don't know. Does it?
No, I just want to say, of course, yes, it's a smoke-free environment. So I answered her and I said, smoke-free? Yes. Mm-hmm. Not pet-free because my logo on my store is my dog. I didn't say that part.
That didn't sound offensive to me.
Oh, good. I said smoke-free? Yes. not pet free.
Yeah, I don't think I'd feel too bad about if I were you, because my response would have been a photo of me smoking a cigarette and holding the thing over a cat litter box saying, any other questions?
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
No, I wouldn't do that. We do get questions like that. And I can tell you something that I learned from a previous customer support colleague who once said to me, and I don't know if she made it up. She said, there's no such thing as a stupid question, but there are stupid answers. And that really struck home with me because I was a sarcastic little when I was first starting off.
Can't
at eBay.
Imagine it.
I was. And my, you know, sometimes I wanted to be sarcastic as a customer support rep, which you can't do.
Oh, shit.
And I just learned to calm that down and say, look, yeah, maybe it's in your listing. It's already been printed, but maybe they missed it. And it's all right. Don't worry about it. You know, answer the question as though the person really just didn't see it and don't draw attention to it. And I think that works. And that was my whole thing about that play acting with the glass ashtray. That's a challenge for anyone who's working in your place where you have to let somebody down nicely. It's not impossible, but you have to do it. You don't want to really offend anyone. Because, you know, that person you offend, who knows what they got back at home that they may bring in that's worth a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I actually might talk tough, but I really don't. Like offending
people? Oh, I don't think
people.
You talk tough.
You don't?
No, I think you're good. You're very diplomatic. I know that about you.
Thank you.
Well, Sherry, we're about out of time. It's been a real pleasure and an honor to see you again. I'm so glad you came out to visit us here in the campus.
Yes, it's great to have sellers on campus and see them in person again.
Thank you. And the truth is, you are what I miss about living in California.
Oh, we miss you too. Hopefully we'll get to see you again soon. I know we'll see each other in October. This may actually have been broadcast or aired after the Reseller Remix event, but we'll see you there.
I'm coming. Yay. I'll
be there. Or you were, and we've already seen you. See, that's the thing about podcasts.
Oh,
it's hard to keep a linear timeline.
Man, we had fun.
We had fun. We will have fun, and we did have fun. There, we got all the bases covered.
Okay.
Thank you, Sherry Smith.
Thank you for having me.
Sherry Smith sells on eBay under the user ID Sherry_sells. She takes things on consignment. So if you're in the Denver area and you're curious about getting some of your stuff unloaded, look her up and send her a message.
You got questions?
We've got answers. Our first email this week, Brian, comes from eBay seller Tina, who responded to our request for listener suggestions regarding what we should offer for podcast swag in 2023. Tina sent her suggestion to podcast@ebay.com. Here it is. I see people love the big blue IKEA bags. It would be cool if you could get similar bags with the eBay logo for us to haul our treasure finds in. Thanks. I listen every week. Tina, Lake Exchange.
What a great idea.
Oh, it's a brilliant idea.
Alas, the eBay branded bag already exists.
Ta-da!
Search eBay on black eBay bag, and you'll find many examples that sellers have posted, but...
What?
I looked, but we don't have a box here. Otherwise, I would send her one.
Yeah, and the problem with sending her one is that everyone else is going to want, you know, the whole class. We have to send them to the whole class.
But I like this idea. Maybe what we should do is we should... get some from Allison or Jason because they have a big pile of these somewhere.
Yeah, but they're not branded the podcast. That's the problem.
I know, but we could give them the eBay bag because it'll cost a lot of money for us to rebrand them the podcast and then give them a separate podcast item. So then we give people two items.
Well, that's probably not a bad idea. I don't think we give out more than 100 a year.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you mull it over because I don't think that we're going to be able to actually create the same IKEA bag.
IKEA-like.
Oh, we have to say IKEA-like, right? Yeah.
The Vero coming out in me.
Yeah, well, they're to cancel our program. It's a takedown of the podcast. That bag that looks like the four-letter Swedish furniture store bag that comes in blue and yellow.
We have a very nice one that comes in black with our logo on it.
Right, but it doesn't have the microphone. It's not purple. It doesn't have the eBay for Business podcast. That's what we want, right, for our swag.
Yeah.
We just don't want to be a secondary clearinghouse for the rest of eBay swag. I mean... we have to have more self-respect as a podcast, Brian.
But
what?
We can like piggyback on these people who order lots and lots of them, and then we won't pay as much.
Okay, I go for that idea. Yeah, it's a budget thing.
And then we can add something else in that's got the eBay branded logo with the nice, you know, microphone and everything. And maybe we could have our own purple bags.
Well, you know, that is a possibility. You can never have too many eBay bags, be they just eBay or eBay for Business podcast. Tina, we'll explore that option, but I can't guarantee it's going to happen.
No. If you have an idea for our next eBay for Business podcast swag item, email it to podcast@ebay.com for our consideration. All entries will receive, whatever swag item we have end up choosing.
Yeah, you got to send them to us. We don't know what we're going to send you. We're running out of mugs. So we got to do this quickly.
We'll order this fall something.
We'll get something this fall. Now, why don't you read our next question?
Our next question is from a seller they didn't provide a name.
Nope.
Just a user ID. Items from the South sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, Brian and Griff. I was recently moved over to the new listing format. There is one thing I cannot figure out, and I was hoping you can help me with it. With the old listing format, I could choose to offer the discounted shipping to the buyer. In the new system, I cannot find that option. I'm assuming I am just missing it, and this option has not been taken away. Can you point me in the right direction? Thanks, Items from the South.
Well, Items from the South, you can offer your buyers your discounted shipping rates in the shipping preferences page. So if you go to My eBay and then click on the Account tab, look on the left-hand side for shipping preferences and click that. And there's a whole bunch of different settings that show up on the next page. Look at the one for offering your buyers your discounted rates and then click Edit. And then you can either decide to keep those rates for yourself so that your buyer gets charged the standard rate and you get to keep the difference because, hey, it's a business. Or you can change it to the altruistic option, which is I'm going to pass my discounts that I get from eBay onto my buyers. I say altruistic, but actually, if you're charging for shipping, providing the discounted rate can put you at a competitive advantage to those sellers that aren't. And there are a lot of sellers who are not providing those discounts to their buyers. I know because I'm a buyer. I see it. And it just strikes fear and anger into my heart.
You email them?
No, I'm not going to email. You learn over time, Brian, that in this world, unsolicited advice is a recipe for disaster.
Which is why we solicit advice here on the podcast.
People send in the questions.
Right. That's what I'm saying. We solicit it.
But I even give unsolicited advice on the podcast because what do I care?
Well, most of the time is accurate.
We'll have a different contest next year and it'll be, guess the number of times that Griff was wrong.
Oh, we should do that.
I just have to keep track of them. There's so many.
No. Anyway. There aren't that many. That's why we have experts come on.
Exactly. So Items from the South, just go to your shipping preference in My eBay account and you can offer your discounts to your buyers or not.
We did not take it away.
What do you mean?
We did not take the shipping discounts away.
No. Yeah, they're still there. Yes. This next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by seller Tom from Australia, who has a question about bulk listing upload. Hey, would you like to read this one?
Sure. Hi, Brian and Griff, and or Griff and Brian.
Well, now that's diplomatic.
I think he might listen to the show.
I think he does.
My name is Tom, and I am a regular listener of your podcast.
Ta-da.
I appreciate the great content and the casual banter. You guys crack me up. I was hoping to seek advice on the CSV bulk upload functionality on eBay. I am manually churning out up to 50 listings a day on the eBay desktop tool and feel rather burnt out. There must be a better way. I've tried unsuccessfully in the past to use the bulk listing CSV reports, but it is very complicated to set up, and there doesn't seem to be much support for the process in the Seller Hub. I've spent hours on this to no avail. It almost seems like you need a computing degree to get started.
Well, you do. You figure that out.
You do not. Is there any in-house resources, training, or support you could point me towards? If it changes anything, I'm selling pre-owned clothing on ebay.com.au. Keep up the good work. Regards, Tom in Australia. P.S. If there are any mugs left, I would love one. Without coffee, I would die, and I would love your support in keeping me alive. Well, don't die on us, Tom. We'll definitely send you a mug.
Tom, we used to have a feature on eBay for creating and uploading listings in bulk. Actually, we used to have two features. One of them was called Turbo Lister, and the other one, I think you might remember, is a long time ago.
File Exchange.
Exactly. Today, there isn't an eBay tool that does what the old File Exchange program used to do. And with that feature, you could add multiple listings in a special comma-separated value file. You could do it offline and upload them to eBay all at once. But there are ways to create multiple listings fast using something like listing templates. If you go to Seller Hub, Listings, and then on the left-hand side, look for listing templates. A listing template, I use them all the time, can make listing creation a little faster by eliminating the need to enter certain types of data like your payment, shipping, and return policies, store and eBay categories, description, and for specific types of items, even some of the item specifics. But you got to set them up. So you need to do like a little accounting of the types of pre-owned clothing you sell, and maybe think about how can I set up different listing templates so that I can,
like, if he's selling like a shirt, maybe there's one that would be for shirts, but if he's also selling, you know, parkas or something like that, then it might need something different because the shipping's going to be different.
That's exactly what I do. I have templates for men's shoes, men's shirts, men's accessories, and then I can always pull up one of those templates and there's less data to have to enter. So you can get through 50 listings a day a little faster. You can also find lots of third-party services that offer the ability to create listings offline for bulk uploading. I know that there's a tool out there that's been used by eBay sellers for years called 6bit.
Yep.
And it offers this feature. And there may be other services that do as well. I just don't make a business out of learning and supporting all these third-party services. But you can explore them.
Right. If you do a Google search for eBay third-party providers, you'll land on the page and you can look at some of them. So, Tom, there's also an advanced eBay tool that allows for offline listing creation for later bulk upload. It's called Merchant Integration Platform, or MIP, M-I-P. If you search Google on eBay Merchant Integration Platform, the link shows up.
Yeah, and we'll put a link in the summary overview for episode 213 to MIP. Tom, MIP has a fairly advanced learning curve, so be prepared for that. But it might be an option for you to consider. It's usually built out for bigger merchants, but the sellers that I've talked to who have used it said, yeah, you know, it helps.
You're right about MIP. There's a lot that's in MIP.
Yeah.
So it can seem overwhelming, even though someone like Tom might be able to just simplify it for his use case.
Exactly.
Well, our last question for this episode was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Bill, who asks, I have seen several times where a seller has added seller notes to an item. I have yet to discover how to add these specific notes to a listing. Please advise. Prop Sector 45, Bill Wolf.
Well, Bill, I can only assume when I first read this, Brian, I thought, well, how does he see where a seller has added seller notes to an item? Because seller notes, they're not visible to buyers. I'm not quite sure where he saw this, but I'll just make the assumption that's what he's talking about. Because, Bill, there are two ways a seller can add seller reading only text to a listing. One is the custom label field that shows directly under the title field in the listing form. And if you don't see this custom label field when you're creating a listing, click the little button on the upper right hand side of that section that says Edit All Options. It's a little button to the right of the title field, and then slide the button for custom field to the right to turn it on, and now you'll see the custom label field.
And I believe that any text you enter in the custom label field is visible only to you, the seller.
That's correct, Brian. The custom label field will show up in your active view in Seller Hub as a separate column, and in your orders or sold view in Seller Hub as a line of text under the order title. And if you don't see a column for custom label or SKU in your active view, you just click the customize table link on the top right-hand corner of the active view page, and then check the box for custom label SKU, and then save. That custom label column will now display in your active listings page. And thanks to our good friend Harry. Remember Harry?
I do remember Harry.
He and his team made it possible that you can now edit the contents of that and many other fields on the active view page at any time up until the item ends or is sold, and you can do that in line.
That was a nice feature, and that's probably what Bill meant by seller note.
Maybe, except there is actually a second way to add seller viewable only text to any listing, and that's something called add a note. And add a note has, or add or edit a note, has been around for years and years, way before the custom label.
So that's probably what he means by seller note.
Yeah, I suspect it is. So, Bill, if you go to Seller Hub and then Listings, you can add a note to any listing by clicking the arrow next to the edit link for that listing. It's right to the left, to the right of the little link for editing, and then select the option for Add Edit Note. The note field will open, and you can type whatever you like into that field. This option is also available for any listing in your orders view. Same place, click the arrow to the left of the order listing title and select Add Edit Note.
Are these two fields, the custom label and the notes field, visible anywhere else besides the orders and active page?
What a brilliant question. There are, and that's why I love them. Both of these fields, custom label and note, are available in the transaction report you can create and download from the payments tab in Seller Hub, as well as in the report you can download from the orders page in Seller Hub. Oh, and one more thing to mention, the note field is sometimes shown as my item note in a report instead of note or seller note. I think we need to remind the team to be consistent about how they label columns. I use both these fields for attaching important information for each listing, like cost of goods, date purchased, location of purchase, etc., etc. All of this information comes in handy when using reports to compile business records for a year, like for taxes or just to manage and track your business.
I seem to recall an episode where you went over some ways to use the custom label field to accommodate more than one type of data point.
We did, and that's episode 183 with Rebecca as co-host. We talked about a little spreadsheet trick that some people might know about. It lets you split one column into two or more. You should review that episode if you want to learn the details, because I don't want to sort of outline them here. And again, I like teasers. Go listen to a past episode and boost our numbers. Thank you so much.
And tell your friends.
Tell your friend. Tell your family. Tell everyone.
Well, the one thing we love more than answering your questions is receiving them. If you have a question, why not call us here at the eBay for Business podcast on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. Call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week at your convenience. Leave a question or comment, and who knows, you just might hear your question on the air.
If you're not a call-on-the-phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And now I know you've been avoiding it, and some of you have actually probably stopped the download, but here is your three-point podcast checklist for this week.
Number one, check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day.
Number two, before the holiday rush arrives in force next month, put some time aside now to organize your books so that you have everything you need at the ready in 2023, well in advance of tax time.
And number three, need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we reference during the episode.
And on our next episode, episode 214, I'm so excited because we're going to feature two of the sellers we met at the Boss Reseller Remix in Las Vegas last week.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, or listening forward to it.
Listening forward.
We'd like to again thank our special guests this week, Sherry Smith, and also Katie, Vicky, and Teresa for taking some time while we were at the Reseller Remix to spend some time with us.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.